In the proposed state budget unveiled in January, Governor Andrew Cuomo advanced the merger of the State Office of Mental Health and the Office of Addiction Services and Supports, creating a new state agency, the Office of Mental Health, Addiction, and Wellness. The measure, which was born out of the overlapping populations served by the two entities, didn't end up in the adopted state budget, but it remains under consideration, with the Assembly holding a hearing in June to consider the issue. For more on the topic, including what was gleaned at the Assembly's hearing and the possibility of the merger moving forward, we're joined by Assembly Alcoholism and Drug Abuse Committee Chair Phil Steck, a Capital Region Democrat who co-chaired the June inquiry. Welcome to the show, Assemblyman.
Thank you very much, Dave, for having me.
So heading into the recent Assembly hearing on the possibility of offering more integrated services with this one agency, what was your opinion on the issue? For example, did you think a merger was the right way to go? And what did you think more specifically of the governor's plan?
So at the budget time, the governor's plan didn't look like much of a plan.
Okay.
It was extremely vague, and we were not comfortable moving forward under those conditions.
We being?
The Assembly.
Okay.
And we had a discussion in the Alcoholism and Drug Abuse Committee about it. There wasn't a lot of enthusiasm for the merger. The advocates make excellent points, which are all correct, that you can't have what they call siloed services, that these two areas overlap, and they raised 12 barriers to effective service that exist with the so-called siloed approach. No one supports the siloed approach. The real question is there is an alternative bill that would create one single licensure stream for entities that can provide both types of services at the same time. There's another major concern, which is the lack of availability of mental health services generally. So it's fine, well, and good to talk about making sure that you have the services to go together with the rehab-type services. But the problem is mental health providers are in short supply.
Right.
Reimbursement rates are low. This discourages people from entering the field. So I think we have a ways to go before we get a solution to this issue.
And siloing in practice, is that essentially where someone might go to OMH for mental health services and they might actually need some addiction services or substance abuse services and they're not really getting connected with them and vice versa?
Well, yes, but I think the one of the issues here is that if you go to OASIS, an OASIS-regulated entity, or you go to an OMH-regulated entity, under current law, there has to be a primary diagnosis. And that may not really be accurate. The two are overlapping and can't be necessarily severed one from the other. So while there is coordination, I think there needs to be reform in how these issues are addressed. OMH is a much larger agency than OASIS. And the at least in my experience in government, increasing the size of a bureaucracy on the whole is not the way to kind and compassionate services. I think that a lot of advocates feel that the need for a single stream of regulation is so paramount that the merging of the two agencies will automatically make that happen. I think the devil is in the details, and the governor's proposal at budget time was too amorphous to really get an understanding of what the merger would accomplish in and of itself.
So at this hearing, you heard from the heads of OMH and OASIS. What was their focus? Because they obviously come to any sort of inquiry with an agenda. What was the story they were trying to pitch that you guys?
I thought they did an excellent job.
Okay.
The hearing was not about merger or no merger.
Mm-hmm.
The hearing was about what are the barriers and how are we addressing them today and how we might do it better in the future.
But they didn't come in and say, and you know, the governor's got this plan, Assemblyman, which you guys might want to hint, do in 2022. Nothing like that?
They did not. There were two or three of the numerous advocates we heard from that took that position. But I personally was more interested in the substance of the concerns that they had, that they were trying to address through merger, mm-hmm. than I was in merger, no merger. That's not what the hearing was about.
And so what was then the focus for the OASIS and OMH heads? Were they just talking about ways that they can, you know, avoid siloing and ensuring that if you are going to OMH, that they're cognizant of the potential that, you know, you might need to hit up OASIS? Or, I mean, what was their focus?
Yeah, I think they were trying to say, we do have existing programs. They are working. However, again, one of the problems in the space is lack of resources. You have a number of these programs, but they're not sufficient to be statewide. And one of the points that was being made, particularly with respect to mental health services, which are in short supply, mm-hmm. to be honest, and particularly in short supply with respect to youth, they were talking about telehealth, because then you could be in some rural part of New York State and still have access to mental health services, where even though you might not have sufficient providers in your area.
Right. Well, you mentioned that licensure issue, and the Times Union reported that at least one speaker at your hearing argued that focusing energy on a merger is misplaced and that the state should instead be focusing on the creation of a single comprehensive license so providers can deliver addiction and mental health services. What would that licensing process potentially look like, and are there people that want that dual license to
yes.
move forward with?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. In fact, one of the main advocates of the merger has the dual licensure as part of a pilot type program. And I think the dual licensure is essential. I thought that particular advocate made an excellent point that you could have a merger and not accomplish the goal of a single simplified license procedure if the new agency was more focused on other things other than this. Mm-hmm. I think one of the advantages of having OASIS as an agency is that they were created, they were demerged from many years ago in order to put more focus on this topic. So I think that's the advantage. My experience with OASIS is they are, you know, fairly customer friendly, and you know, the bigger you get in any government bureaucracy, the more difficult that is. And I'm not singling out government. When you get into your local business, it's a lot easier to deal with than when you're right. dealing with some giant corporate bureaucracy. It's the same point. When I was young, I read an economics book called Small is Beautiful, and I think it had a lot of sage advice.
Okay. In case you're just joining us, we're talking with Assembly Alcoholism and Drug Abuse Committee Chair Phil Steck, and we're talking about the best way to serve New Yorkers who may have mental health and substance abuse issues. According to the National Institute of Mental Health, nearly half of individuals who experience a substance use disorder will also experience a co-occurring mental health disorder and vice versa. So based on the number of people that will have both of these problems, do we have any sense right now of how many New Yorkers may not be accessing treatment for both, potentially because of siloing or for just the mere fact that there's trouble getting services in general?
Well, I think that both play a role. I don't have a sense myself mm-hmm. of how many are not getting treatment. I suspect it's a pretty high percentage. Again, it's a question of resources. This is not an area that has been a tremendous budgetary priority for the state of New York. It's an area that struggles for funding every year. We have a problem, which was pointed out at the hearing, that private insurers are often paying less for these services than even Medicaid pays. That's very counterintuitive. So I think the main problem here is lack of devotion of resources to this problem. I think that we would like to design a more perfect system and get more people into it. The Oasis apparently has mobile units that go around the state to try and serve underserved populations. But again, even now flipping to the mental health side, there is clearly a shortage of mental health providers everywhere.
Right.
And particularly, our services for the youth are underfunded, and there's, you know, the availability of child psychology services is very, very limited. A good focus for that would be to increase what schools do. But again, a lot of this requires funding. And, you know, one of my favorite subjects is it's hard to fund programs without the revenue to do it. So I think that, again, I'm sure at the end of the summer there will be some legislation offered that will address the so-called siloing problem, and we would also need to try and get people who need these services more aware of how to get to them. Also a problem in upstate New York is transportation. People who are in extremis are unlikely to have transportation to where the services are. So it's a very comprehensive problem, but you can have the best designed licensure system, but without funding, you're going to have difficulty providing the services that are needed, no matter how good your licensure is.
A recurring theme for this conversation has been the lack of providers to actually do this work. How do we go about increasing that population? On Monday, we talked with Senate Mental Health Committee Chair Samra Brouk about legislation that extended some licensing deadlines or windows there. But I mean, what's the long-term fix to this problem?
Well, you know, we do live in a capitalist society, and in a capitalist society, if the pay is low, mm-hmm. you're not going to attract people to the field. So to the extent that reimbursement rates are miserable, coming from private insurance or in the Medicaid space, they've been stuck in a rut for 10 years. To the extent that's what you're dealing with, people are not going to be jumping to go into the field. They will find other things that they can do with their psychology degree or what have you. So it is quite a challenge. I think the principle that has been raised with the Be Fair to Direct Care movement is equally applicable here, that a lot of these human services providers, their staff, are terribly underpaid. They have difficulty attracting folks. And we wrote a bill this year dealing with what are called recovery homes, sometimes called sober homes. And what you have is some individual open a house and say, I'm going to house so many people who come out of rehab here, come out of treatment. And the rule is you can't use any inappropriate substances mm-hmm. while you're a resident in the house. And that's kind of it. There's no support services in terms of counseling for people to help them through the difficult times that they will undoubtedly encounter. There may be one person who starts using again, and that can spread because, again, there's no real management going on. And when we wrote the bill, we put in a provision to require the presence on site of a certified alcohol and substance abuse counselor from basically 9 to 5. We were very cognizant of the mental health aspect as well. But again, the difficulty of getting mental health services, we didn't write that same requirement into the bill. What we wrote was is that mental health services had to be available. So that was just based on the recognition that it's more difficult to get qualified mental health services providers. And we had a bill in our committee that would allow certified alcohol and substance abuse counselors basically to diagnose mental illness. That is just not something that we could possibly do, because diagnosis of mental health is difficult. And sometimes many providers try as hard as they will and don't, at least for some time, really penetrate to the essence of the person's problem. So it is not so easy as just saying we need to have mental health and substance abuse services in essence merged in the same program. There's, I would say, much more availability on the substance abuse services side, particularly because a lot of programs use peers. They have certified peers who have been through addiction problems themselves. Then they try and help people through their particular substance abuse problem. We need to get CASACs and the peers able to make sure they can refer people for appropriate mental health services, but they can't possibly provide them.
So in the wake of this hearing, are you optimistic about the ability of the state moving forward to ensure that people are connected with the right mental health services or substance abuse services?
So, as you know, I tend to be generally rather optimistic. I think that there is a very good start. I'm optimistic that by the time session starts, we can have a bill that'll move us far along on the area of an appropriate regulatory process for getting licensed to provide these services simultaneously. But again, my real world experience tells me that we need to face up to the problem that we've got to increase the supply of qualified mental health providers. And I personally am concerned about watering down the standards for who can diagnose mental illness. I think that's it requires a tremendous amount of training and knowledge and experience. It's not like diagnosing a broken leg. So, you know, I think, though, that we will have a good path forward.
Because our state government has this three-legged operation system with the governor, the Senate, and the Assembly, and the governor and the Senate, like we mentioned, were both on board with basically the governor's merger plan. What does that mean in terms of negotiations moving forward? Does that mean, for example, the Assembly, if you want to advance, you know, a licensure issue, is going to have to go along with some form of a merger in the future? Or
I don't see that, because when I look at the bill, Senator Harkin had a bill on the merger that did get passed. I'm very unfamiliar with the dynamics of the Senate. But Senator Harkin, who's the corresponding chair in the Senate, also had a bill where Assemblywoman Chantal Jackson was the sponsor in the Assembly of the single licensure model. And so I think the possibility of the single licensure model could exist without a merger.
Assembly and Senate takes the lead on that, leave the governor behind.
No, I think, look, the governor... I didn't get the sense that the merger was like the hugest priority. I think that what we want to do is accomplish the goal. And at the time when we were looking at the governor's plan, as I said, it was extremely vague. And so we didn't think there was enough there to really consider it in this session. A lot of things get passed. I mean, the Senate is a smaller body. I think it's easier sometimes for them to pass bills.
Definitely.
Yes. And I had a very good election bill that we had passed three times. Finally got taken up in the Senate this year, passed the Senate, and then never got to the floor by the end of session in the Assembly. And I think just they ran out of time. We sat there, and I thought I was listening to a filibuster at the end of session because... hours of debate. There was one particular bill. Hours of debate that didn't seem very productive. And that slows down the process.
Yeah, we had Assemblyman Hevesy on the show last week, and we're talking about child care issues. And he's talking about XYZ bills were all on third reading on June 10th, last day of session. But he said because of the way the Assembly Republicans were approaching debate, which was, you know, laying everything aside, making sure that you could have a debate on everything, it really just slowed up the process. And if you're going to, you know, open up the debate on everything, then you're going to be there well past June 10th.
I think what's tended to happen, too, is that we have focused more and more and more on everything has to be done in the budget. And then it seems like the real process of legislation gets short shrift at the end of session. But I do agree with Assemblymember Hevesy that there was one bill. It was so inconsequential. I can't even remember what it was. And I had to listen to 20 members say the same thing over and over and over and over again. And I don't know what that really accomplished. It didn't change the vote at all on the bill.
Slows things down.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a real problem for the Assembly right now.
Well, we've been speaking with Assemblyman Phil Steck. He is the chair of the Committee on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. Assemblyman, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.